And welcome back to the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Amy Morris, filling in for Celeste Quinn. Our guest this hour is Dr. James Curley. He is a local plastic surgeon, board-certified plastic surgeon. He attended medical school at Loyola University and is currently a Champaign resident. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for joining us. We're going to talk a little bit about plastic surgery this afternoon. And from your experience in your practice, is the popularity of plastic surgery growing or decreasing, or how do you see it since it first really started to hit the people?
Oh, I'd say that it's clearly growing. The demand is out there, and more people are finding that it's a very safe and effective way of achieving things that they didn't think were possible in the past.
Now, is plastic surgery for everybody? Are there ever people you have to just look at them and say, you know, this isn't really for you?
There are certain individuals that are not qualified candidates for plastic surgery. There's no doubt about that. And we will, on occasion, turn down folks for plastic surgery. For example, liposuction is not really a procedure that should be utilized for weight loss. So I will generally suggest that individuals in situations where they're significantly overweight go ahead and get in touch with a dietitian or get in touch with a local fitness center so that they can work off some of that excess before we go ahead and consider liposuction.
Are there other criteria such as age or, like you mentioned, weight or personal physical health that you have to look into before somebody can go through even the most minor plastic surgery?
Well, I'd say that we generally like to screen for major health disorders and make sure folks don't have significant allergies that might get us into trouble in the operating room.
Like what kind of allergies?
Oh, allergies to certain medications. We need to be aware of those sorts of things.
So this is really sort of considered minor, an operation, minor surgery.
Most any of our procedures are more than just minor. There are a lot of things that are very minor, but liposuction is not what I would consider a minor procedure. It does take a very short period of time, and the results are evident quite quickly, but it's still not something that I would take lightly.
Can you see what you will look like before the surgery? Is there a way to do that to sort of give you an idea of what to expect? And how realistic are people's expectations usually when they come to you?
Well, to answer your first question, yes, there are ways that one can view or preview the possibilities. We have a digitized camera system that then feeds into a computer and allows us the ability to morph the individual into what we would anticipate the result would be. Mm-hmm. And we're very cautious in using that system because we don't want individuals to go away with unrealistic expectations. And so that my nurse will get the photographs for us and then work with the images, and then she'll call me into the office and I'll go ahead and tell the individual whether I think the morphed views are achievable or not. And then we're often quick to point out that we can do all kinds of things with the morphing that wouldn't be possible. The system does have a cloning ability, so we can actually give you a third eye if you want, but that's not necessarily going to be achievable surgically.
So what do people really expect, and how realistic are they? Do you have to sort of dash hopes and say, look, you're not going to be Julia Roberts, but we can get rid of this?
I'd say that over the years, that need to dash hopes has gone down considerably, because I think that the consumers in general are coming to the office much better prepared than they were in years past, with a lot more information. Certainly we have folks in town who are surfing the net all the time, getting information from our website and other websites about what they can expect to achieve.
A little more savvy consumers.
Oh, a lot more savvy than they were 10 to 15 years ago. A lot more savvy.
If our listeners have any questions for Dr. Curley, they can give us a call at 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. Our phone lines are open. Meanwhile, I wanted to get into a little more discussion about facelifts specifically. Personally, I would think that that would hurt. How can you make me feel better about it not hurting when you give me a facelift?
Well, the discomfort associated with the facelift generally is gone in 2 to 3 days after surgery. And as we're performing more minimal incisional approaches using endoscopes and more limited approaches to facelift, I'd say that the discomfort does significantly subside in a much more rapid fashion. And we're very good at making sure that the individuals do have a significant amount of pain control right afterwards.
Like medication to help
right.
ease the pain.
Correct.
I've seen video in the past, years ago, from the 70s and maybe the 80s of people getting facelifts, and it seems pretty invasive. Have those techniques been improved in the past few years?
Well, I'd say that facelift is a reliable procedure, and facelift is really an umbrella term for a lot of different processes that go on, and things are performed in a much different fashion than they were 10 to 15 years ago. But what I'm quick to point out to individuals is that what it looks like during surgery is not necessarily relevant in the long run, because I've had individuals who come in and said, yeah, I've seen a facelift performed on whatever channel, and I'm really concerned about how uncomfortable that's going to be. And the reality is that the end result is what's the important part, and so that we work real hard to get over those concerns in our discussions in the office.
How old are people who usually come to you looking to reduce the lines and wrinkles in their face around the eyes, or maybe the laugh lines in the mouth? Do you usually see people in their 30s or 40s, or have you seen that number drop, that coming to you younger?
I'd say that I've seen individuals in their early to mid-30s concerned about smile lines, laugh lines, forehead furrows, and there are a lot of different techniques that are available to work through those problems that are not necessarily surgical. Mm. And so lately we have been using Botox, which is botulinum toxin, for helping to correct those wrinkles that are present that aren't necessarily quite ready yet for surgery.
Okay, you've jumped ahead, so I'm going to jump ahead in my notes and ask you a little bit about Botox. Some people may not have heard of that, but it's my understanding that it's actually botulism that's injected into your skin.
It's the toxin
okay.
that's purified from cultures of the organism that does cause botulism, yes, but it's a short-acting, relatively short-acting muscle relaxing agent that is very effective at softening frown lines, crow's feet, forehead wrinkles on a temporary basis.
Okay, ooh, that seems a little bit scary, but at the same time you say it's purified. What do you mean by that?
Well, that means that you're getting the purified, relatively short-acting form of the agent that does cause the muscle paralysis, and it's in very small dosages so that it's not going to be a significant risk factor for you.
Okay, we do have a caller on line one. Thank you for holding. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good afternoon. I have a son who is 20 years old, and he was in a motorcycle accident about 4 months ago, and he has been left with a scar on his knee, and it's left his, he can hardly bend his leg. What can be done about that, if anything?
Well, oftentimes scars will soften up and relax over the course of 6 to 12 months from the time of injury. But if there is a functional problem that's causing the inability to bend the knee as a result of the scar, there are surgical release procedures that could be performed earlier than a year to help with function. But one certainly needs to be certain that it's just the scar itself and not an underlying bony or cartilaginous problem that's limiting function as well.
Would a plastic surgeon be the type of a physician that I would contact for this?
Well, once you're certain that there is not a bony or cartilaginous problem limiting function, then yes, a plastic surgeon would be the appropriate person to contact to do some form of revision to help release that scar and help with function.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
And thank you for that call. And that brings up an interesting point, which that many plastic surgeries are not just for people who want to improve the way they look, but some people who may have gone through an accident or some sort of surgery and they want to get back to the way they were before. Where do you see more of, people who want this for cosmetic reasons or because they just want to get back to normalcy, as it were?
Well, my practice patterns have changed over the course of the years, and more and more in my practice these days is focusing on the cosmetic as opposed to the reconstructive sorts of problems. But the reality is that if you look at the statistics, the number one thing that plastic surgeons do is remove growths, whether they be cancerous tumors or benign cysts that are potentially a problem. That's the number one procedure that plastic surgeons perform if you look at the surveys year in and year out of plastic surgeons.
Would these be large growths? Is this something that a dermatologist, say, couldn't remove in his or her office as an outpatient kind of procedure?
Well, not necessarily couldn't, but wouldn't want to tackle, because dermatologists are quite capable of removing the vast majority of growths that do come into their office, but oftentimes patients desire a different level of care, and I'm optimistic that plastic surgeons, for the most part, can do that for them.
We have a caller from Tuscola on line 4. Go ahead. Thanks for holding.
Hello?
Tuscola?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I've recently heard about a new procedure and wondered if Dr. Curley could speak to this. I have an elderly dad who has some diabetic ulcers, and they were talking about a procedure where they can actually clone some cells to make a skin graft that could cover his own decubitus. Do you know anything about those procedures?
Well, I know some about those procedures, but those are generally experimental and utilized at major medical centers that are performing the research relating to epidermal cell cultures. And so as a general rule, there are other things that are utilized, other measures that are utilized to help with the ulcers other than epidermal cultures. Plus, the epidermal grafts are relatively thin and not necessarily as stable as other forms of grafts or more complicated flap procedures might be.
Okay, so what is the standard then for that type of wound?
Well, it really depends on the size of the ulcer, how long it's been present, exactly where it's at. Generally speaking, the standard of care is to begin with just good local wound care first to try and see how much healing can be achieved. And then obviously you need to investigate whether or not there are problems with circulation as a result of the diabetes that are interfering with wound healing that need to be corrected before one would even consider performing some form of surgical intervention from a plastic standpoint. Sure.
Thanks for your call. Chicago, you're on line 1. Thank you for holding.
Chicago.
Hello? Yes, go ahead.
Oh, yes, I'm calling. I have a question. I'm African American. I'm considering getting like breast augmentation or liposuction, but the problem that I'm afraid of is keloids. I've had a C-section, and it left a scar. It took quite a while to heal, so I'm afraid that if I go into something like plastic surgery that I'm going to be left with a scar because of keloids or something like that.
Well, that's certainly a possibility, but the nice part about scars is that as a general rule, there are lots of ways that we have of dealing with managing them, and one of the commonest things that we're using these days in Afro-American individuals is a substance called silicone gel sheeting, which we will have them apply over the scars starting at about 4 to 6 weeks from the time of surgery, and then they will wear those on a daily basis, these strips over the scars, so that it helps put nice gentle pressure on the scar and helps keep the scar as flat as possible and give you the best outcome you can have.
Okay, and I had another question about there's a procedure to get rid of like stretch marks. How does that work with African-American skin, again, dark skin?
Well, there aren't any reliable procedures for getting rid of stretch marks. We have used in the past a pulse dye laser that is very helpful for plumping up the skin and getting some softening of stretch marks. But stretch marks are one of those really frustrating areas for plastic surgeons because there's not a good way of correcting them. Some folks have used Retin-A on them with limited success, but Retin-A is only a temporary correction. The effects of Retin-A go away about 6 to 8 weeks after you stop using it. But the pulse dye laser we were using was very useful for relatively narrow relatively reddish-colored stretch marks. And so in Afro-American individuals, your concern about scar discoloration and scar elevation is certainly a risk. So there really aren't a lot of great options for stretch marks.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks for your call. The last caller mentioned scarring. Are there some procedures that may involve more scarring than others? And I would assume that in most of these procedures, the scarring would be minimal by design.
It's minimal by design. What you see with most liposuction procedures is that our scars are only about 4 to 5 millimeters in length. Mm. When I started doing liposuction about 12 years ago, we were using larger diameter liposuction cannulas, so out of necessity, the scars had to be longer. And so at that point, the scars were about a centimeter. So if you put that in perspective, it's a little less than a half an inch. Now we're down to in the neighborhood of a quarter to three-eighths of an inch. And so scarring really is dependent on the individual, number one, and number two, location. There are certain locations that no matter who puts the scar there, it has a greater tendency towards being elevated and raised and thickened and widened and reddened for a long time. And the belief is that we plastic surgeons can do scarless surgery, and that's unfortunately not reality. So there is always going to be some limited scarring with whatever things we do.
If a patient comes to you and asks for some procedure, plastic surgeon's procedure, whether it be liposuction or facelifts or even Botox, which involves more injections than actual a knife or a laser, I presume.
Right.
What if they don't like the way it turns out? What if they're disappointed in the results? What happens then?
Well, we do everything we can prior to performing the procedure to be certain that we have relatively realistic expectations and desires and goals that can be met. And if there is a correctable dissatisfaction, then of course we will do everything we can to surgically correct that for them within reason. If the expectation was greater than what could be provided in the first place, that's an even more difficult proposition to deal with, because then we need to spend a lot of time discussing where we go from there.
We have a caller on hold in Villa Grove, line 4. You're on the air.
Yes, I was wondering if you could tell me what is used for tattoo removals these days. I have a lot of friends who are concerned about that and may have gotten a tattoo in one of their younger and wilder days and now are wondering what to do about it.
Tattoo removal has undergone a real evolution over the past 10 to 12 years. When I started doing plastic surgery about 12 years ago, we had dermabrasion, which is actually sanding the tattoo away. We had direct removal of the tattoo, assuming, of course, that there was enough loose skin to entirely remove the tattoo. And then there was actually removing the tattoo and skin grafting the area. These days, people have read and heard a lot about laser removal of tattoos. And there are a number of lasers available for removing tattoos, all of which are highly expensive pieces of equipment, and none of which are reliable at removing all colors. So therefore, if one wants to have the most scarless result possible, one needs to go to someone who does have two or three different lasers at their avail to go ahead and work with these different pigment colors. And in addition, use of lasers often involves multiple treatments. And so once patients have gotten the price list for the multiple treatments, then they're back to the more reliable gold standards of removing tattoos, if that answers your question.
Okay. And so what would be available in the Champaign-Urbana area?
We do have in our office the carbon dioxide laser, which is useful for removing tattoos, but it works a little bit more like dermabrasion in that what we're doing is unroofing the pigment and then eliminating the pigment once we've unroofed it. We are not currently using any of the more elegant pulse dye lasers or neodymium YAG lasers or argon lasers for removal of tattoos.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks very much for your call. If our listeners have any more questions for Dr. Curley, you can give us a call at 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. That last caller brought up an interesting point about lasers, which is that there are so many lasers, and lasers are used in many different aspects of plastic surgery.
Yes, we have a variety of lasers at our disposal as plastic surgeons. But as I said, a lot of that technology is very expensive and is not commonly available in plastic surgeons' offices, so that what has happened in the area is that these lasers may be put on trucks and rented out to the offices for use on a short-term basis. We do have a laser available in our office, though, in addition to the CO2 laser, which is very, very useful for hair removal, and we're really excited about that laser.
I want to get into the hair removal topic in just a minute, but we do have a caller on line one from Champaign on hold. Thank you for holding.
Yes, hi. I was calling to find out about, is there any way that you can get rid of the bumps on the back of your legs? Is there any kind of treatment for that? Does liposuction take care of that?
Bumps on the back of your leg. I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Well, like cellulite, I guess they call it.
Oh, well, if you're talking about on the outer thigh areas, for example, where there's that kind of wavy
cottage cheesy
yeah. look, yes, there are non-surgical approaches for treatment of cellulite, and one of the systems that's currently available involves a massage roller system that over the course of 7 to 10 weeks of use on a regular basis in the office as a very quick procedure can help soften the appearance of cellulite, tighten up the skin to a small degree, and actually with this system we have seen reduction in thigh circumference, for example, as much as 2 to 3 inches. And the same thing goes with waistline reduction, because we would utilize that system from about the mid-back area or to the region of the scapula, the shoulder blades, all the way down to around the ankle region. So it is a very effective system that has increased in popularity over the course of the last 2 to 3 years.
And you have that in your office?
Yes, we do.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
How permanent is the liposuction procedure, particularly for thighs?
Liposuction is designed, or was designed, primarily for what Dr. Alouz, who developed the technique, would call the deep fatty accumulations that are diet resistant. So saddlebags, the area around the belly button, the love handle area. And if you address those diet-resistant areas with liposuction, they don't come back. If the individual were to gain a significant amount of weight, they may be heavier uniformly, but not necessarily out of proportion as they were originally. And so they may put on fatty tissue in the superficial layer that is more diet-sensitive, which is distributed throughout the body, but they're not going to put it back in the diet-resistant pockets, the saddlebags,
so once
et cetera.
Once you take it out of there, it's not ever coming back?
It's not coming back unless you gain a significant amount of weight. And then where you're gaining the fatty tissue is in the superficial layer, which is in the 2 to 5 millimeters of fatty tissue beneath the skin.
Interesting. Let's talk a little bit about laser hair removal. You had mentioned that right before we took that last call. There are just a variety of ways to remove hair. You have your classic shaving and your waxing and electrolysis and all sorts of things. How is laser hair removal different?
Laser hair removal is different in that it's much less painful than electrolysis, for example. It is very new, and so we don't have a lot of long-term studies, because really the oldest systems around have been only on the market for a little over 3 years. And it's a very effective, safe method of hair reduction. We can't honestly say hair removal quite yet, because the studies aren't out there that show its permanency, but more and more information is coming in that suggests very strongly that a year to 18 months out from the last treatment, there is still reduction in the quality, in the density, and in the density per square inch, so to speak, of the hair shafts that are present.
So the so every time it grows back, it's finer, it's less hair.
Right. There's less, because the way the system works is the laser energy is aimed at the pigmentation in the hair shafts. Mm-hmm. So it's not very effective for blonde hair. It's not very effective for gray hair. We do things to help get pigment to those hair shafts so that the laser energy can be concentrated around the hair follicle. But what happens is the laser energy is taken up by the hair. It then is essentially destroying the active hair growth bud. What we need, though, are hairs that are actively growing. If we have a hair shaft that is in the later stages of hair growth and is actually separated from the bulb, those hair follicles are not as adequately treated, which is why the system is not going to have instantaneous results with one treatment.
Sure.
It generally takes, depending on the body area, somewhere between 3 and 8 treatments spaced about 2 months apart to get 80 to 90% hair removal in a given area or hair reduction in a given area.
But you would still have to keep those treatments up every few months or every so often as needed?
As needed. The studies seem to show that after, for example, in the upper lip area. Mm. If one has 3 or 4 treatments in that area, one can generally go somewhere between 12 and 18 months before they may need an additional treatment. And even then, you're only treating maybe 1 or 2 or 3 little hairs in a given area that have cropped back up and have been resistant to the treatment process.
Do you find more and more people are interested in becoming hairless?
Yes. And interestingly enough, about 40% of our clients are men.
How so?
Wanting their back and shoulder areas corrected.
And the whole mono eyebrow thing.
Too, right.
One eyebrow.
The one eyebrow look is one of those areas that has been very popular.
You don't usually see a whole lot of that. You just usually assume it's women who want to have smooth legs. But
right, and that's been the surprising thing about the laser hair removal is that we do have about 40% of our clients are men.
Okay, if our listeners have any questions for Dr. Curley about plastic surgery, he can help you out. 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. When we were talking about plastic surgery before and we were talking about expectations, I wondered how in-depth consultation should we receive as patients before we actually decide to pursue a plastic surgery procedure?
Well, I think as with anything related to your health, you need to have as many of those questions and concerns taken care of before you make the final decision. And we try every way that we can with written information, video information, and lots of talking to make sure that we've gotten as many of the questions answered beforehand, because it's much easier to deal with them prior to surgery than it is to deal with problems that have originated or have arisen after surgery due to either miscommunication, misunderstanding, or just lack of information.
And when we talked before about liposuction, you said it's not really designed for weight loss per se. It's not like getting your stomach stapled or any other really dramatic procedure that maybe some overweight people might be considering. It's more for people who need to get rid of those, what you called earlier, saddlebags, something like that.
Right, figure faults.
What would liposuction do for me that diet and weight loss and exercising can't do?
If you were at your ideal weight and you still had the bulges, for example, in the outer thigh area, the saddlebags, or in those areas of figure faults. And so, for example, when we're performing outer thigh liposuction, we're probably removing somewhere between 300 and 400 cc's, which is less than a pound per side. But those sorts of little changes can make a dramatic difference in terms of proportionality and one's ability to get into the clothing that they would like to be in.
And that's has a whole effect on the self-esteem as well.
No doubt about it.
I mean, this is all about self-esteem, really.
Correct. There's no doubt that this is a self-esteem issue.
when you perform the liposuction procedure, first let me ask you, is it a very popular procedure? Do a lot of people come to you thinking that liposuction is the way to go?
Well, certainly the popularity of liposuction has grown over the last 5 years, and more and more individuals are seeking out plastic surgeons regarding liposuction. I would say that over the years, too, expectations have become more realistic, too, as the word has gotten out that this really isn't a procedure for massive rate reduction. There are individual plastic surgeons who are performing what I would term large volume liposuction, where they're removing more than 5,000 cc's at a setting. But those individuals need to be who are going to have this process need to be approached very cautiously, and oftentimes will spend a day or two in the hospital afterwards and need blood products and things like that. And so it's converting something that's being done for figure faults into something that's a more major surgical procedure. Our average amount of blood loss with a liposuction procedure is about 10% of the total volume we remove. And if we're going to be removing 2,000 to 3,000 cc's of tissue, that's a reasonable blood loss to expect. But when you get beyond 5,000 cc's of liposuction, and remember I said 10% of that volume is blood, then you're looking at 5,000 cc's essentially a one-unit blood loss. So if you went to the blood bank and donated a unit of blood, that's about what they're going to take. And so that's still fairly safe. But you get beyond that, and you start running into problems with complications that relate to the blood loss.
So for your average patient, who we're not talking about the massive amount being taken, but just your average patient, what sort of post-operative care would you be looking at then?
Well, generally speaking, folks are pretty well back to their usual activities by about a week. Most patients describe the first day as being like they've been into a bad car wreck where they're bumped and banged and bruised and feel achy and sore. The second day, and most of us can relate to this, that feels like you've been at a bad aerobics workout when you haven't been to one in, say, a year.
Sure.
Third day is kind of like you've been to a bad aerobics workout, period, when you're in pretty good shape. Fourth day, we have most individuals back to halftime work. So we'll have bank tellers, transcriptionists, individuals who have relatively sedentary jobs back to halftime work. By a week, we're encouraging them to get back to all but bouncy, jiggly sorts of activities, so that at a week we're having folks get back on their Stairmaster, their treadmill, their exercycle. But we generally suggest that they wait about 3 weeks before they get back to things like aerobics, step aerobics, tennis, racquetball, those sorts of things.
And the wait is just WAIT, the delay, I mean, is just because of the pain as opposed to you might hurt something?
Right, right. It's going to be more uncomfortable because of that bouncy, jiggly feeling, and there's no point in being uncomfortable if you don't have to be.
Do you have to wear special garments? I don't see me putting on blue jeans after I get liposuction.
Well, the thin lycra spandex compression garments we're putting into individuals are generally pretty well covered under clothing. We'll suggest that folks will wear a loose-fitting skirt or loose-fitting pants, their loosest-fitting pants, when they're wearing their compression garment for the first 3 weeks after surgery.
And other than the belly area and the thigh area, are there other parts of the body that can be liposuctioned?
We've liposuctioned from under the chin, from the upper arm.
Ooh, that's a popular place.
From the calf area, the front of the thighs, basically where there are fatty accumulations that are abnormal, we can generally address them in some form.
That's surprising. And some of the best candidates are then people who are already in relatively good health?
Best candidates are individuals who are very near their ideal body weight and who are well motivated. Because certainly the process, if you're going to invest in the process, then you really need to adopt the notion that you're going to have lifestyle changes if you haven't already made them. And so I'm happiest to see individuals who say, you know, doc, I exercise 4 or 5 days a week, and I'm right within my ideal weight range, and these things on my thighs, they're just driving me crazy because I can't get an A-line skirt if I want to. I can't get into jeans. I have to buy one size larger because these pockets won't get in there.
Gotcha.
And so in our office, we will work to be cheerleaders for patients to maintain that healthy lifestyle after they've invested this serious amount of time and money into the process itself.
You mentioned the money. I don't know how comfortable you feel about this, and I'm certainly not asking you to give out prices on the air or anything, but what would I expect to shell out for your average liposuction or facelift or whatever? Does it vary dramatically between, say, a shot of Botox versus liposuction?
There's such a wide range, and it's very difficult to give a specific amount on the basis of a telephone call. And we have individuals call the office quite frequently wanting price ranges, and we can give ranges, but we really hesitate to even do that because there is such a variety of what people will call about. People will call and say, I really think that I need liposuction, and once you're done talking to them, you realize that what they actually need is a tummy tuck. Or they'll call and say, I really want a facelift, and when you talk to them after a while, you realize what they really need is a laser resurfacing to help with the wrinkles. So rather than give unrealistic expectations as to what the cost might be, we're very, very hesitant to give out prices over the phone.
So they just need a consult then.
That's the easiest way to do that. And then they can be more comfortable with the notion that the number that they're getting is actually what they're getting into.
Okay, we have a caller from Champaign on line one. Go ahead, please.
I have a question. How do you know who a qualified person is to do the surgery?
Excellent question. You beat me to it, actually. Go ahead.
That is a good question. The American Board of Plastic Surgery is the arm of the American Board of Medical Specialists that accredits and credentials plastic surgeons. And so you do want to be certain that the individual you are going to is an accredited board-certified plastic surgeon. That's my feeling.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for your call. If any of our listeners have any more questions, we're going to be wrapping this up in just a few minutes, but you can get in one last question at 333-9455 or 1-800-222-WILL. When we were talking about liposuction, there are some new procedures very briefly that have come to my attention. Endermology, are you familiar with that at all?
Endermology is a brand name for a system that works very well for the correction of cellulite and the soft tissue deformities that go along with that. And we're using a system in the office that was developed by a different company that does essentially the same thing. It's basically a massage vacuum system that does help to reduce fatty volume and correct dimpling and waviness in areas of cellulite.
Now, then the generic term would be massage vacuum system?
Well, it's a massage therapy system, and the brand name is Endermology. It was a system, is actually the first system that was developed for treatment of cellulite in a non-surgical manner. It actually arose in France about 15 to 16 years ago as a system for helping soften burn scars.
Hmm.
And one of the side benefits that was noticed was that, hey, this Swiss cheesy look that we've got here on our outer thighs are getting better when we're treating the burn scars. And so studies have been done that seem to demonstrate that it is a pretty effective way of correcting the cellulite appearance.
You know, massage therapy sounds a lot more pleasant than liposuction.
Well, liposuction is clearly not for everyone, but there are individuals who are not going to benefit from the cellulite treatment system either, and those are individuals who are significantly over their ideal body weight. And the nice thing about the cellulite treatment systems is that it's about a half an hour to 40-minute session in the office a couple of times a week for about 7 to 10 weeks. And then a maintenance schedule is devised based on how effective the treatments have been initially and then how rapidly there seems to be a return of the Swiss cheesy look, we'll call it. And this is clearly a maintenance system. It's not a permanent correction. If someone desires a more permanent correction, then liposuction is probably the way they're going to need to go.
So there's no cutting, there's no lasers, there's no injecting. It's just like a massage vacuum system.
Yep. It's a system that has rollers that roll and grab and massage the skin. You're in a garment that helps keep that massage system from actually catching the skin, mm-hmm. and there's very little bruising, if any bruising. Individuals who do have a tendency towards very bad varicose veins may not be candidates for this because mm-hmm. those varicose veins may be injured with the process. But for the most part, it's applicable to most individuals.
And Dr. Curley, any final thoughts?
I've enjoyed being here.
Oh, we've enjoyed having you. And again, plastic surgery is a self-esteem thing. Even if you've been in a bad accident and you want to fix yourself back up again, it's for you.
Oftentimes, even with reconstructive situations, it is a very self-esteem oriented process.
Okay, thank you very much for your time this afternoon.
You're welcome.
And thanks to Dr. James Curley and to all of our listeners who called in. We really appreciate that. Dr. Curley is a plastic surgeon in Champaign and is a board-certified plastic surgeon.